Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante, along with the engaged and soon-to-be married Dustin Schutte. How long do you have as a free man, my friend?
Oh, boy, we're coming up on just over 2 weeks now. The 30th is coming up, so we're excited. End of the month.
I'm sure you are excited. I hope you're getting in all of that bachelor stuff now while you still can.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, look, see, now May has already been a fun month for me because it's my birth month and then the Indy 500. So you top off, you add the wedding onto that, and then I'm going to have something to celebrate basically every weekend in May from here on out. So that's exciting stuff.
And your wife will say the best for last on May 30th.
Exactly, yes.
Just a little bit of advice for you. Before she says it, you say it, Dustin. As good a month as the month of May is, I'm saying the best for last was marrying you.
Yes, I think that's smart. A good tip right there.
All right, let's move on. As much as I'm sure everyone wants to hear about your upcoming nuptials, let's switch it back to college sports, Dustin. And, you know, over the last half decade or so, it's probably been the most volatile college sports has been. Conference changes, NIL, transfer portal, so much going on. You say to yourself, whew, now we can take a breath. Most of those changes are over. Not so fast, my friend. Now, it's hitting basketball, the NCAA tournament. First of all, they couldn't let well enough alone at 64 teams. They made it 68 with a couple play-in games. Now they're going to 76 teams. Moore's got to be better, right, Dustin?
False. I actually have a few thoughts on this, and I'm going to play both sides of the coin here a little bit, and then I'd like to hear your thoughts. So number one is, from the structure standpoint, I hate it. I think it waters down the regular season even more. I think that there are games that obviously will still matter because you're still playing for seeding and the bubble, but there were not enough good bubble teams this year to warrant like expansion. Like, you weren't saying, boy, six or seven really good teams got left out of the field, we need to expand this thing. It was, thank God those teams didn't get in, because how bad, like, you even think about St. Louis playing Georgia in that first round game. I think St. Louis, it was an 8-9 game, and I think St. Louis won by 35 or 40 points. So, you know, you're going to have that in any sort of tournament format. So I wish that they would have left it alone. However, my mind has always been open to the idea of expansion if it would benefit mid-major teams. If there is a team that wins its regular, Miami of Ohio would have been a great example of this. Let's say, you know, they won their regular season. They had an undefeated regular season, and I think they got beat in the first round or their first game of the MAC tournament. I don't think it was a first round, but you could then reward Miami of Ohio. I mean, they did get in, but you could reward Miami of Ohio and the MAC champion if you think they're both good enough to get in. The problem is that's not going to happen. It's going to be mid-major teams that finish just above 500 that have won 7 or 8 games in their conference and really continues to water down the field, in my opinion. I would, at least, if you were saying we're going to expand the tournament and we're going to allow more mid-majors to get in, I would be okay with that, because I think that there are some teams out there that maybe they couldn't get the schedule this particular year or whatever the case might be. Maybe they dealt with an injury early in the season. The guy comes back and they're playing really good basketball, whatever the case might be. The other thing that really bothers me is I wish that they would move these play-in games as somebody who covers these teams and the potential to cover in like a Dayton, just move the games to the site where that team, the winner, is going to play the next round game. It is such a pain in the neck to try to book a flight to Dayton, book a flight to the next place that you got to go. You got to do it well in advance, or you're going to pay $600 for a ticket. And guess what? If your team doesn't win, you're stuck with that airline fare and you're not going anywhere. So I wish the NCAA would just eliminate, like, they're talking about a second first four host city, probably like Las Vegas, because the NCAA has fallen in love with Las Vegas for reasons we know why, I'm sure. But to me, if you were going to eliminate at least that travel part of it, make it easier for fans, make it easier for journalists, make it easier for the teams to get to and fro. But no, we're not going to do that either. So I would understand the idea of expanding if it was going to help mid-majors, but the things I hate about it is the travel. You're going to set up a second I guess I don't even know how many games it's going to be now. And here's the third thing. I will let you talk at some point, Jim, I promise.
Oh, that's okay. You're the expert, so we want to hear you.
I've seen the bracket for this, and at some point, I feel like you might lose the casual fan. Somebody who just watches the tournament to fill out a bracket, or someone who watches a handful of college basketball, or somebody who, you know, has a favorite team and then really watches. It's going to be impossible to fill out that bracket on the first night almost. So, and that's what we used to love, right? Like, is you just fill out the bracket the very first night and it's, oh boy, this thing is great. I'm going to spend an hour putting together this bracket, or I'm going to take my time and use every second of every day when I'm at work to fill out this bracket. Maybe it won't be as much of a turnoff as I think it will be, but I just think that common people are going to lose interest in that. If you look at it and it's like, I got to wait to see 18 different teams if they're going to get in or not, or whatever the number is. So those are some of the major concerns. And finally, I just keep going. I want a soapbox here.
Go ahead. I just wind it up and let you go.
I think the even bigger concern is not if you go to 76, at some point you're going to get to 96 or 128. And that's just too many. And that's my biggest fear is they'll say, well, 76 worked. A lot of people are still watching. Let's expand this thing even further and let's get 96 teams into the field. I'm done.
Take a breath. Okay, just wanted to make sure. And my response is ditto. I agree with everything you said. Maybe we've been together too long. But, well, I will add to that just a little bit on a few things. What I always hate about this is they will try to wrap this into, like, they're being magnanimous, giving more teams opportunities. No, you're looking for another paycheck. You brought up an exceptional point, and it's been valid the last couple of years with the play-in games. Why not play them at the site of the next game, the tournament? It would help the fans. It would help the players. And you know what? You're irrelevant to them. The players, the fans, irrelevant. It's about, hey, if we could get money out of Dayton, we'll put it in Dayton. Now we have additional sites like that. They'll wrap it up into, hey, isn't it great? We're expanding the areas where the games are played, Dayton, Vegas, whatever those venues are. Well, you know what? You don't take into consideration how you're hurting people logistically. The other thing you mentioned, getting to 76, gee, that's the stepping stone till the next, to 96 or 128. You know what? I think they've already broken that barrier. When you're saying 76 teams,
yeah.
And when you do those formulas for the strength of teams, you are starting to get those power conference teams who are going to be under 500 in their conference. They will be one of the top 76 teams and make it in. And it's kind of like the argument that Nick Saban made when Alabama didn't make the college football playoffs. And it's like, well, if there was a matchup between us and one of those teams that made it in, Alabama would be favored. So doesn't that tell you they're the better team? That's not what this is about. In college football, Alabama, you had your chance during the regular season. You lost games you shouldn't have lost. Your own fault. I don't care if you are better. You had the chance and you lost. It's the same way now if you would argue that a power conference team that finished in 12th place in the conference is better than that MAC team, second MAC team. You know what? I don't care. I don't care. The MAC team did not get its chance. You did. You got a chance to play a power conference team 20 games, and you know what? You lost more often than you won. The MAC team that you might have the strength of schedule or the power index or whatever that, I don't care. That doesn't matter. You had your chance. You didn't get it done. It's time for somebody else to get the chance. But we know that's not how this is going to work, Dustin. It's going to be those power conference teams that are going to get in, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because it's been, who are the two people that are banging the table for this? It's Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti. And I'm sure the other Power Four commissioners are in favor of this too, because they know, like, from the RPI standpoint or all these other metrics that they measure, I can't even remember, like the quad one wins and net ranking. What I'm thinking of, RPI is the old system, but the net rankings, the quad victories, things like that, strength of schedule, all that stuff is going to favor the power conference teams, just like it does in college football. So you're not creating more, you are creating more opportunities, but you're not creating, in my opinion, more opportunities for teams that are deserving of it. As you said, you get 20 games, you can't get to 500, you can't finish in the top half of your gigantic conference, then you don't deserve a spot. Like, those conferences are guaranteed probably at the minimum anymore, like 8 bids. If you have less than that, you're having a pretty bad season. And I think the Big Ten has had 11 or 12 at some point make the field. We don't need to see the 13th and 14th team in the Big Ten make it. I would much rather see a team that, you know what, they had a really strong regular season. They had a tough game in their conference tournament for what, you know, whatever reason they weren't able to get it done. I want to see that team at least have a chance to compete because maybe they couldn't get a schedule against these teams.
You're exactly right, Dustin. And you know what? I have a couple more points on this topic I want to make, and I'm going to do that right after we take this break. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. I'm Jim. He's Dustin. We're talking about the NCAA basketball tournament expanding to 76 teams. And I mentioned, Dustin, there were a few other points that I wanted to make. Some of those teams from the mid-majors, and Miami of Ohio was the poster boy for this past season, an undefeated regular season. They lost in their conference tournament. The argument from the power conference was, oh, well, I don't care if they're undefeated in regular season. They're not good enough. If we played them, we'd be favored. Well, and look at their schedule. They didn't play anyone. Well, I'm not sure it happened to Miami of Ohio, but it does happen to the mid-majors. The big schools won't play them because they have nothing to gain in playing those games. And if they do play them, they'll only play them on their home court. Right. They're not going to go to Miami of Ohio to play. So that's also unfair. So those teams actually don't get an opportunity. The other part to this that bothers me with the expanded play-in games, which I think could actually be 12 of those play-in games, is you cheat some of those teams out of the opportunity to make the actual tournament. I win my mid-major conference, we have the biggest, and then you make me play a play-in game where if I lose that, I don't get to the round of 64, the actual tournament. Maybe now that there's more play-in games, people will treat that as part of the tournament, but I don't think they will, Dustin. I think it's like the precedent has been set. Those teams that are playing in Dayton right now, it's not really looked at as if they actually made the tournament, is it?
No, I don't think so. And, you know, it's easy for me to say that. I'm not a player, and I never played, and so I would have loved to play in March Madness. So maybe to some of these guys who get this opportunity to compete, maybe they love it. But growing up, don't you dream of playing that Thursday or that Friday, that first playing in that, for even if you get your butt kicked? Like, and I remember, you know, the guys from Queens College or Queens University. I don't remember which now. Sorry, Queens, down in North Carolina. But they played Purdue. And I remember one of the players after the game, Purdue won the game by 30 points, was never really close. And the kid was just so grateful. Like, I got this opportunity to play in March Madness. And not everybody gets to do, in fact, most players don't get to play in this tournament. So even though we got beat, you know, we had a great season, and I got to be, you know, I got to do something that everybody dreams they wish they could play in. And I just don't know if you get that same feeling if you play in the play-in tournament. Obviously it creates more opportunities for more players, but I agree with you. Like, I don't think people view it as the NCAA tournament. The NCAA tournament begins on Thursday. That's right. That's how you and I will probably always perceive it, no matter how many teams this thing expands to. It's probably different from a player and coach perspective. They see that March Madness on the floor, they probably get the same jitters. But to your point, like, now there's going to be teams that probably deserve to get in, probably a lot of mid-majors that deserve to get in, that are going to be playing on Tuesday night or Wednesday night that otherwise would be playing and getting ready for that Wednesday or Thursday game, or the Thursday or Friday game. And so you rob them of that opportunity to, you know, it's going to be harder for a team like a 15 seeded Lehigh to beat a number two Michigan State or Duke. Sorry. I was thinking Middle Tennessee 15 beat Michigan State. I won't bring up the number 16 team that beat the number one seed a few years ago. but you get my point.
Yeah. And I do. And that's the thing also for some of those teams who they have no delusion that they're going to win the tournament. Okay. Now, I'm sure they go into each individual game thinking, you know, we got a chance to win. But that Middle Tennessee, Podunk University, whatever, getting the opportunity to get on the floor against a Purdue, against a Duke. And you know what? If I'm one of those players, I go up against Duke. We lost by 30, but I scored 8 points, including a jumper over Cooper Flag.
Yeah.
I am going to have that video, that highlight, and I am going to show that to my buddies. I'm going to show it to my grandchildren in 50 years. And, you know, there's 12 of these games, which means 24 teams, which means 12 of those teams won't get that opportunity. And it's unfair to them, and I don't like it. It's almost to me like, if you're going to do this, Dustin, and I know this is crazy and I didn't work out the numbers in my head how it works, but instead of making this bottom 24 teams play a play-in game, if you're going to do this, do it the reverse way. Give the top 12 teams a bye.
Sure.
And make that first round about the team 13 through team 76. I'm not sure if I did my math correctly there, Dustin.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. I think that would actually be a good deal, because I've thought, you know, to some extent, I'm going to probably bite my tongue on a lot of this. But once you get seeded, there isn't really an advantage to being a number one seed. Like, you obviously play the weaker seed, but you don't get home court. You may get closer to home. Maybe you don't. You never know how that's going to play out. So that would provide at least some little bit of incentive. And it maybe creates a little bit more of an advantage for the higher seeds. Now, you could say, like, if you want this to be the ultimate, you know, sort of college basketball tournament, which is based on chaos and not always necessarily the best team, is provide them with a bye week or a bye game and have the other teams fight them out and they'll play the winner. So I don't dislike that idea. I just hate that it's come to this point. And one thing that you bring up that's been, I'm going to make this comparison. I don't know if this is going to make a lot of sense to people in Pennsylvania. Because why would it? This is going to be an Indiana reference. Yeah. But Jim, when I was growing up, the Indiana high school basketball tournament was the best. There was no class. So you would have schools that had 10,000 students play schools that had 400 students. And it made for the best tournament ever. You always rooted for the underdog. I went
Who's
to one
yours?
Of those, yeah, exactly. I went to one of those smaller schools. And growing up until I got to, I don't know, sixth or seventh grade, you would play all the teams in the county. And the biggest school in the county would win that sectional title. You play teams in your section.
Yeah.
My school beat the big school to win the sectional championship one year. And there was a parade and there were streamers. There was confetti. It was great. A few years later, the state decided we're going to have class basketball. So you put all these schools, yeah, you know, in their respective classes. We won a state championship at that in our class, one of the lower classes. I can tell you it was way more fun to win that sectional title and beat some of your rivals in the county and beat that bigger yeah. school than it was to win the state championship. I don't know. It's just, and so to your point, like, those teams that you mentioned, those Middle Tennessees, those Lehighs, Fairleigh Dickinsons, you're right. They're not thinking about a national championship, but if they can win one game, that is their national championship. That is their selling point. That is probably more exciting to them than if they were to, you know, get to the Final Four of the NIT, if they just won one game in the NCAA tournament, right? So that's what I think you're robbing some of these kids of, and I think you're robbing some of those opportunities to potentially have those big time upsets. So that's why I just always reflect on that. And like, Indiana high school basketball why it was so popular is because of the, you know, you would have these occasional upsets. It was very similar to the NCAA tournament, where the big schools would always be in the state championship and they were always the best teams. But every once in a while, you might get that one school that would pop up out of nowhere. And I think that that's what the beauty of the NCAA tournament. And I just fear that if you add more teams, you might have a team that's a quote unquote Cinderella, but that's Auburn, who's 18 and 15.
Yeah.
That's not Lehigh, who's 27 and 3, and nobody knows about them until they win their conference tournament and they go in and they, you know, make some noise in the NCAA tournament. And I think that that's what you're losing by adding more of these schools.
Well, and the other part of this is Auburn, even if they're 18 and 15, had an under 500 record in the Southeast yeah. Conference. I'm sorry, not Cinderella. You know, you can't, I won't look at them that way. There's a very defined story that you find in the NCAA tournament year after year after year. That first round, first of all, I have my bracket, okay? Mm-hmm. And I always, you know, everybody likes to pick an upset in there. By the way, thank you, Wisconsin, for losing, you know, the 12-5 game against the team. I can't even remember who the team was because it's so obscure. High Point, thank you. That was like the highlight of my tournament. And I had that in my bracket. But if you sit down and watch, even despite your bracket, you spend that entire Thursday and Friday rooting for the lower seed.
Yep.
Except for the team you have winning the whole tournament. Okay. Right. That's the only team you want to have winning that 1-16 game. Otherwise, we're rooting for the upset. Then as the tournament progresses, you want the blue bloods left when you get to the Elite Eight. You want the matchup. You want Purdue versus Duke, okay? That's the formula, and the formula works, and you're now messing with the formula.
Yeah, I think that's entirely correct. We've had some years where there are Cinderella stories that make deep runs, and usually when you get to a certain stage, usually the Sweet 16, those Cinderella stories, those smaller programs tend to drift off, and you tend to see the bigger power. You don't get as good at games. Now, I know that this year was kind of a bad example. The Final Four wasn't really that exciting, but you did have four power, and it built up the excitement and the anticipation for some really exciting. We did have some really exciting Elite Eight games, and I think the more that you get that, but the better it is for the tournament, especially as it goes. But everybody lives for those first round upsets, and if you can get a decent team that can get into the Sweet 16, it makes it even better. My ideal scenario is you get one of those teams into the Sweet 16. You don't want three or four and then have a bunch of blowouts in those final rounds.
Exactly. And you got so many games in the first round. Hey, I could flip around till I find the Cinderella. Yeah. All right, that's it for quarter number two. We're going to change topics when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, quarter number three of our show. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. Dustin, we talked about the expanding NCAA basketball tournament in the first two segments. Now we're going to shift gears to, you know what, the only consistent thing in the NCAA now in college sports in general is change. And we're going to see some more of it coming. And we're starting to get some momentum. We saw it already with the, you know, 5 years to play five seasons. Apparently it looks like it's going to start happening as soon as this season. But there's even more going on. And what's interesting, Dustin, is a lot of these changes, they seem to be coming or at least getting a push from the government, from the federal government. And I am typically a government stay out of it. The less government, the better. However, in this circumstance, I'm not so sure I feel that way because my feeling is the only thing worse than federal government involvement is letting the NCAA run things.
Yeah, I completely agree with this. And I'm sure we're gonna dive into some of these specifics. But this is what we'll talk about. But I'll let you bury the details. But at first, bury the details. Boy, that was a bad choice of words. That's not what I meant. Expose the details.
Freudian slip.
Yeah. I actually, when I heard some of these, I'm like, in theory, these are good ideas. There's no way they're going to be enforceable, though.
That's true. That is going to be the case. And we are going to hit on some of these changes, the specifics for them. And, you know, let's kind of attack them one by one. And some of them are good ideas. But, well, the first one, which I just think is really fascinating, is, well, first of all, their incentive seems to be to protect the schools from themselves.
Yeah.
You know, they can't keep up. They're spending so much money. No one's putting a gun to their head to spend that money. they are choosing to do it, okay? They're the ones choosing to give the multi-million dollar pot buyout to the last coach and then go and do it again with an 8-year contract to the next guy for $10 million a year. So one of these, and this is the first that I've heard it, they're actually looking to limit coaches' salaries because they've gotten crazy. Well, whose fault is that, Dustin? It's the schools giving these guys the crazy salary. But I'm fascinated by two things with this. One is they would use a ratio of the cost to attend the school. So, for example, it's like, okay, tuition is X. They would make the limit for the coach's salary be 10X. The fascinating thing about that, Dustin, is all of a sudden the Ivy League schools would be able to afford the most expensive coaches.
Yeah, I mean, it would create a little bit more of a level playing ground, right? Like, now you would probably see schools jack up their tuitions in order to, you know, so I don't know if that's the best model. But I don't, I mean, the schools did this themselves. You could see, Gretchen, we watched one of those old games, you know, on Big Ten Network does those flashbacks or whatever. And you watch a game from 15 years ago and it's, you know, Lane Kiffin signs $2.5 million deal. And it's like, what time was this?
Yeah.
So it just shows you how crazy the money has gotten recently, mostly because of those television deals. But again, this is a thing that I actually think is a good idea, is to limit those salaries, because I think you would have less coach movement. I think you would have coaches staying in certain places for longer if the money wasn't that much different. Again, I don't know how you would enforce that in an open market. I do have an idea, but I don't know if this is where we're going to get to or not.
Well, go ahead.
So my thinking is, and we'll have to get to probably more of these details, at some point, there's going to be another entity, not the NCAA, that rules college sports. Players and coaches are going to then become employees of this league, and it's going to be like the MLB, the NBA, the NFL, where there is going to be a salary cap max. There's probably some sort of coaching, you know, they can implement their own rules. You sign a contract to agree to these rules. There's probably a players union involved and you would have, you know, basically a salary cap, and a player can make only X amount, or, you know, the team can spend X amount of dollars and that's all that can be spent. That's where I think that this is heading. And that would be the only way they could regulate it. Otherwise, there's no chance that any of that would hold up in a court.
Well, I think you can do that with coaches because they are employees. And, you know, put in a salary cap on the coaches and maybe the coaching staff. But this is the same issue that they have with the players right now, where they have this, okay, the schools could compensate student athletes and it's approximately $21 million they have. The thought was that would effectively be the salary cap. How has that worked, Dustin? Not so well. Because outside money, and that is what's going to happen if they ever tried to implement this with coaches. They'll be outside. You already have with the coaches part of their compensation package. Oh, you're being paid X dollars by the school, but included in this is a compensation package with Nike, say the company that provides all the athletic gear for that school. Well, Nike ends up paying the coach. Would you be able to regulate that through this kind of rule? I think whenever there's money involved, legally you can't restrict what people make. Maybe you can just for what the schools compensate them. You can't restrict how much the coach makes outside of what the school pays them.
I think that's right. I think that's true. So it would be impossible to regulate it. I don't know how you would offset that. But is that, I guess, I don't know. if you're under one league, what's the, like, there's no incentive for, could they do away with, like, just completely no donors to athletic programs? I don't know how this is going to, I don't know how it's going to work, but you, I mean, you could legitimately see something where, like, I don't want to say you're going to, like, you're not going to tax State College to have upgrades to your stadium. But is there something that you could do where it's only these things will go towards facilities? They can't be. Now, if Nike wants Dan Lanning and who's another Nike school? Is Penn State a Nike school?
They are until July 1st.
Okay, so let's just say Matt Campbell and Dan Lanning to do some sort of Nike commercial and they get paid $100,000. Big whoop. You know what I mean? I don't know that Nike's going to dish out a ton of money to have to hire a different coach from a different school. That to me is coming from Joe Blow's auto dealership. I'm tired of James Franklin. Let's bring in somebody else. Here's the money for the buyout.
Well, that's the thing, that outside money. And I may as well bring in the next one, which is they're going to try to eliminate the way schools or people backing the school are circumventing that $21 million rule. It's the same thing here. Now, Joe's auto body, the value of someone endorsing Joe's auto body is trivial. But if you're talking about a national campaign like you did with Matt Campbell or Dan Lanning promoting Nike, or how about Arch Manning in a Nissan commercial? Yep. Those are things that they're worth a decent amount of money. And right now what they're doing is they are circumventing that rule, those rules all the time. And they are overpaying the players for certain things they're doing, whether it's an appearance, an autograph session. They're finding creative ways to get money to players. And I think they're going to have to figure out how they could bypass or get it past the legal system that you're restricting how a person can make money.
I think it's easier to do this for the coaches than it would be for the players. If I'm like, I think the money for the players is always going to be there. But I think if there's a donor that says there's a salary cap on coaching, that great. I don't have to pay a buyout. It's going to be, the school can handle that. We can spend more money on the players, which is really what we want. I mean, yeah, you're going to have people that want a Nick Saban, a Lane Kiffin, whoever it might be. There's always going to be those outside influences. And I still think there would still be some level of coaching movement, but I think it would be, cause coaches aren't going to, like, outside influences aren't going to have a lot of coaches come in and do a commercial for X million dollars. They're going to save that for the player, in my opinion anyway. So to me, I think it would be easier to regulate the coaching salaries than it would be the play. The players are going to have, I mean, they already do have most of the leverage anyway. They're going to have, if they switch to what I think is eventually going to come down the pipeline, the players are going to have, they're going to have access to all the money, and it's going to look a lot like the NBA and the NFL.
Well, I'm not sure it is the case. Like in the NFL, the players are the stars. The coaches make great salaries and all that. In colleges, traditionally, it has been the coaches. If I say Michigan State basketball,
yeah,
what's the first name you think of?
Tom Izzo.
Exactly. They're the biggest names. Lane Kiffin, Kurt Cignetti, these are the guys who are the big names. So I do think that there are going to be, Arch Manning is a famous name as much about his family as mm-hmm. it is that he's the quarterback at Texas. Matt Campbell is the biggest name right now at Penn State football. You think Virginia Tech football right now. What's the first name that comes to your mind?
James Franklin. Yeah, I was going to say James Franklin. It still is to me Frank Beamer, but.
But again, it makes the point. It's the yeah. coach. So I think those are the biggest names. So I think whenever you do something to restrict the ability of a person to make money, it's going to get challenged in court. And more often than not, you're going to lose if you're trying to restrict income. So So that's what we got to deal with. All right, Dustin, we're on the salary, the money thing. There's some other things that are coming up as potential changes to college sports that are a little more interesting to talk about than just money. How about we get to those when we come back?
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. Dustin, I'm talking to you about the changes that some government intervention is talking about in college sports. And we spent the third quarter talking about the money issues and trying to restrict the money going. But they had some other ideas that I think are really interesting, and I would love to get your take on it. One of them was having a separate playoff system for the group of six. What would you think of that?
Hate it.
Really?
I don't like it. Because who's, like, to me, who's going to watch that? I'm going to be completely honest with you. I have zero interest in watching that. It's the same level of interest I have in the idea of an NIT or a crown tournament. If your team's in it, great. If I was a G5 fan and my team was in it, I would watch it. I don't think common fans are going to watch that at all. Am I wrong on that? I think diehard football fans were, but if you're a common fan, it doesn't matter what the final score is to me. I still think those two G5 teams and a 12 team, 16 team, whatever, is enough to say, you know, that's your incentive. You get your opportunity here to compete and win a national championship. That's how you can include those conferences. If it's just a G5, to me, that's the NIT, and I'm not watching it unless my team's in it.
Well, I think the difference is the NIT is about teams who are runner-ups in, or 500 teams in their conference, whereas this, you know, these are the teams that have won their conferences. And so, you know, an undefeated Army versus an undefeated Miami of Ohio, I probably would watch it, because now I really like college football, and I think when you make it a playoff game with something at stake, now you could argue that it's no different than, you know, like those Division II, you know, North Dakota State winning those yes. championships, and I doubt they get the ratings nearly what, you know, the Division I schools get.
That's what I would do. Or that's what I would say. I would drop it down until, I mean, at that point, just go FCS. Those programs tend to be a little bit more self-sustainable because they don't have the, you know, you don't have, well, I don't know about anymore, but those games were typically more regional. You don't have mm-hmm. to fly clear across the country to play a lot of football games. If I'm the G5, I'd almost just go down and have your own league. I would team up with those FCS schools and create your own league if you're going to do that, because it's probably going to generate about the same amount of interest. Now, there is a game here and there with the FCS. If it's, you know, North Dakota State against North Dakota or something, a rivalry game that's set, I will watch that. So there could be a situation where if there's an interesting G5, but I'm not going to sit on, this is me. Now, there's probably a lot of people that love college football and will consume it that will say, hey, if I get football with championship level stakes, I'm going to sit down and watch it all day. I'm not watching it all day. I will watch the one game I'm interested in. I may tune in for the championship, but that, to me, I just drop it down to the FCS and try to save yourself some money.
Okay, here's another one for you. How about changing the conference setup for non-revenue sports? We talk and we criticize, you know, the Atlantic Coast Conference includes Stanford and Cal. Well, that also means, and we see it in our conference, the Big Ten. You're an East Coast team. You got to go to L.A. or to Washington State or to Oregon. Those are, you know, it's a tough travel. But could you imagine when you're playing some of these other sports? What would you think of reshuffling the deck with those conferences for anything but, say, football and basketball?
Yeah, I'm in favor of that. I think that's a way that you can help those kind of Olympic sports survive, limiting the cost, doing everything more regional, cutting down on travel, cutting down on hotel costs, all that stuff. I think that that would be a huge help. I would be 1,000% in favor of that.
What it does is it corrects the mistake with these conferences made, but it corrects it for the non-revenue sports. Do it for the big sports too, Dustin, because it makes sense. And I know it's about money, but you know, Oregon, USC, UCLA, they're in the Big Ten because it makes financial sense.
Right.
Even though it's not logical.
I would be in favor of actually everything, but I mean, I'm in favor of going back. I would go back to the Big Ten plus one with Penn State. I love the Big 11. I love that conference. It was fair, you know, regional, made sense. So I would be in favor of football going back to that. Having said that, I would be okay if they said, you know what, football's the only one where we're gonna have these super conferences. The other sports are gonna go back to normal sized leagues. And the reason I say that is because at least with college football, it's once a week. You're not making a trip where you have to go, you know, Purdue's not having to, or Penn State is a better example, not having to go USC, then play UCLA. Or if you're on the West Coast, you don't have to make 8 different trips with your basketball team to the Midwest to play half of your schedule. So to me, like you could cut down on that and just say with football, it's not that bad. We can play most of our game. You know, these teams only have to travel X amount of times and they'll play, you know, X amount of home games. They really only have to travel across the country 3 times. It's not that bad. It's once a week. I could totally understand that sort of situation. I'd be more in favor of actually that than even just the Olympic sports.
Well, I'm getting, you know, taking this a little bit further than I meant to. But I have a real issue with these 18-team conferences where you barely play half the teams in your conference. You know, I'd rather they did this regionally, set up 10-team conferences, and you played 9 games against every other team in your conference. Now, it kind of leads to something else that they're pushing for, and it's going to be the big debate that I don't think will ever get resolved. Is right now, television rights are run by the conferences. ESPN has a contract with the Southeast Conference, not with Alabama, not with Georgia. They have it with the conference. The Big Ten has the contract with Fox, now also CBS and NBC, which, by the way, is subbed out or handled by Fox. You know, so Fox is the one that runs that. And what they're pushing for is changing the media rights to be an overall thing. What's interesting is the commissioner of the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference, who have the most to gain by keeping it the way it is, say, oh, no, that won't work. And the other conferences are saying, gee, it'll result in more money. What it means is it'll result in more money for them. Everyone has a selfish argument. But to me, the one good thing is if you somehow did that on a national basis, you could then create the divisions in, you know, like I mentioned, the 10-team conferences and have, say, 6 of those or 8 of those, and you play everybody in your conference. That's why I would root for that, but I'm not sure the Big Ten and Southeast Conference would ever let that happen.
No, they would fight hard against that. And here's the thing that I find interesting, and I don't know how this turned out. I don't know if it has turned out, but there was at one time the NFL was facing a potential lawsuit basically of being a predatory entity because you had to have CBS, you had to have Fox, you had to have Amazon Prime, you had to have NBC to watch all of these different NFL games. You had to have Netflix. Now we're talking about Duke has recently signed a deal with Amazon Prime. So that's another entity. So to me, I don't know how these leagues, and I think we might get to this point where somebody's going to get sued. One of these leagues will get sued because you can't, Jim, I have to have Big Ten Network for my job. Now I can write some of this stuff off, obviously, but there are people who you, to watch every game, you have to have Peacock. You have to have access to Big Ten Network, Fox, Fox Sports One. In some cases, ESPN, even though they cut the deal, there are still some non-conference games that ESPN or ESPN2 might gobble up. You have to have like 7 or 8 different networks to be able to watch your favorite team. So to me, at some point, if they keep this up, I think it's going to get to people are going to just stop subscribing to some of these networks because it's going to be too expensive. Or two, there's going to be some sort of lawsuit filed where the Big Ten can't have games on and contracts with 8 different networks because it would be considered predatory. I don't know how this works, but if the NFL is getting sued, I can promise you the Big Ten and the SEC are going to face similar charges. The SEC is actually not as bad because the SEC has ESPN, and I don't remember, I think there's another one. It used to be CBS, but the Big Ten now has CBS. Yeah. So the Big Ten is the one that's could be in bigger trouble because it has more contracts with more networks.
Well, the problem is there's contradictory incentives for either way. We're saying here that Congress is trying to protect these schools who it costs too much. You know, it's not fiscally responsible. But by going to those multiple networks, that's a way for the conferences to increase the revenue to take care of that problem. So if you restrict the number of networks they could be on, you restrict their ability to make money. So I'm not saying that's the right way, but I'm just saying, you know, on the one hand, you're arguing you're trying to protect these schools or increase revenue. But on the other hand, you're saying, oh no, you can't make that more money because it's costing somebody else money. You know, there's, you know, both sides to this. But I do think what you're going to end up finding is more of these things, like Duke wants to create their own individual deal. We're also seeing, I don't know if you saw this, volleyball, they're going to do a tournament in Dallas, I believe. Penn State's involved. And the money from this tournament's going to go to NIL for the individual teams, which is this very creative way to do it. But I haven't seen where that's going to go on TV. Duke, you know, is doing it with Amazon. Might we see more of that, which is, hey, it's a way to solve our financial problems, but it creates the problem that you talked about, Dustin. You got 15 seconds to respond.
Yeah, I mean, I think that at some point, I think college sports and probably sports in general are going to start to price out fans. And even though its popularity is at an all-time high, I think we're that quickly approaching that level of people just choosing between one or two sports and cutting some of these other networks.
That's the final word. Thank you, Dustin. Thank all of you for joining us. Make sure you come back next time for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.